T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy.
With all this mess, the radio is the only thing that's really working good.
Stop spending! Stop spending!
Welcome to the dawn of a new unified Republican government.
They can run the okey-doke on you, bamboozle you.
We're not enemies, but friends.
So we finally have this God that's gonna come down and help us all.
Now, Mark Reardon.
You just referred to Trump as a God.
Yeah.
On KMOX.
It's go time. It's go time time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see him when I see it, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
Back up, you creep. Get away from me.
Well, darn it, it's a case of the Mondays here. I was trying to pull some audio up because it's my producer Dave Klein's birthday. Well, yesterday was your birthday, right?
It was yesterday, yeah.
So this is, if you Google this. This is worst birthday song ever, and I figured this is what it sounds like at your house, because look, there's like kids crying. Boy, that's bad.
That's pretty accurate.
Wow, that's how it sounded, right?
Oh, listen, yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, happy birthday,
Thank
Dave.
You very much. Yeah,
happy birthday to you.
33.
That's hard to believe. I just remember it was like yesterday when you were whining about turning 30 and you acted like that was old or something like that.
Yeah, so that's...
You're a much wiser man now.
30 is nothing now compared to 33.
That's right. You're a much wiser man and you're the father of twin boys. So that was a key. You put up a pretty cool picture up on Instagram, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I did. Both of them just laying down with me watching Mickey Mouse, and so many of my friends said, oh, that's got to be staged. It's got to be staged. I said, no, I was laying down on the couch. They just came over to me and wanted a cuddle, so... I took advantage of that. You really don't get that anymore once they become, you know, I'd say above a year. They really don't want to cuddle anymore.
Oh, my daughter does a lot.
Well, so now we're getting back to that again, which I love.
Oh, they'll cuddle plenty.
Yeah.
Look, my 20-year-old still likes to cuddle with me.
Well, you know, there's...
He really does. He wouldn't admit it. No, I'm kidding. So I'm back from the woods of Howard County, Missouri, Dave.
How did that go?
All right, I'm going to tell this story. You know, I thought about this. I wavered back and forth about telling it because I'm going to sound, you know, like an idiot, unfortunately, probably.
Doesn't take too much.
No, it doesn't take too much at all. But I'm going to share the story because my gut tells me that there are other hunters out there, my deer hunting brothers and sisters, who will be able to relate. First of all, I hunt near Fayette and Harrisburg, Missouri, sort of in between, and guys that I hunt with, been going with them for like 25 years, good group, and we always have a great time, and I always like to thank my buddy Kevin Yeager and his brother Carlin and the whole gang up there, and we have a lot of fun. So, you've never deer hunted, have you?
No, never.
Opening morning, get out there. Everyone, we've really tried to be more patient and not kill as many deer as we perhaps used to at one point, so there's an effort to get the bucks to be bigger, and everyone pretty much follows the rules on that, but I get out Saturday morning, and I saw quite a bit of activity. There were quite a few deer around me, but some smaller bucks, and I was being patient. I told myself going in, I'm going to be patient this year.
Waiting for the right one.
Just right for the right one. And, you know, not that I'm looking for a wall hanger or anything like that, because I have deer that I've had, you know, put up on the wall. I don't have any spot for them right now, so they basically hang in my garage. But, you know, it's still part of hunting, and there's a preference in this particular situation to not kill does like we used to, just for the management of the deer, right?
Sure.
Saturday afternoon, I get out there, and I really don't see anything, and I come out of my stand, and there are a bunch of deer in the field. In fact, I had sort of a Mexican standoff with one big buck. He saw me. Well, no, he saw me, and then I saw him, and I just didn't move. I'm like, I'm trying to hold still just in case I can get down on my knee and get a shot off, and in fact, I did that, but it was very unstable, and you know, it was a miss.
Was he not moving either, I guess?
No, he was just staring at me.
Okay.
And then he put his head down to take a, you know, a bite from an acorn or some grass or whatever, and I couldn't believe it was about 70 yards. I couldn't believe that he didn't, you know, just run off. But I had him fooled for whatever reason. It must have been the camel that I was wearing. I don't know. So then I hunt Sunday morning. I don't see a damn thing. And I'm thinking, and I don't always hunt in the afternoon on Sunday, because I like to get back. It's a long weekend. You're way. I know I'm not trying to make it seem like hard work or anything, but you know, you get up early and it's mentally,
it's a long
physically
day.
Taxing day.
Sure.
Right. So I get into the, I'm going to go one more time. I knew there were a lot of deer around and there's some big ones, cause I had seen some big ones, you know, going in and out of my stand and, you know, just from reports from the other hunters that I had. So I get up in the stand yesterday afternoon, 2 o'clock, it's about 3:30. And you know, when you're in the woods, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but when you're deer hunting, you're looking for motion. Sometimes it could just be an ear flick or a tail, because they blend in so well. It's unbelievable. I don't know how many times I've had deer that just have happened upon me. And you say to yourself, how the hell did they get, you know, 30 yards in front of me when I didn't even see him.
Yeah.
I didn't even see him coming. But it happens all the time, and I think hunters will be able to relate to that. So at one point, about 3:30, I heard something that sounded a little different than a squirrel. I looked back, and it was a little doe that was coming my way. And she was moving at a pretty good clip, and I thought, well, let's see what's behind her, because typically when you have a situation like that, you have a buck that's trailing the doe.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, because it's that time of year.
Right,
they're trying to get busy,
gotcha,
Dave, if you know what I mean. And this is what... big male deer are a lot like we are, because they get really stupid during mating season. They really do. So I'm looking back, this is behind over to my left, and I see this big buck coming. He was pretty big, and he was a shooter for sure. So I didn't get, you know, I didn't get all excited. The heart wasn't beating. I was thinking it through. I thought, you know what? There's no use in me turning around, because he's going to come right underneath my stand, right? So in fact, he does. And I'm sitting there very patient. I wasn't like overly excited or anything. I was just trying to do the right thing and not make any noise. He had no idea I was there. It was an elevated tree stand. So I'm, you know, however many 20 feet above the ground or something like that. I'm not exactly
sure. And he's just
sure.
Right below you?
I mean, I could have tackled the deer.
Really?
He came under, and he wasn't moving at a real fast pace, but he was tracking that doe, right? So he's underneath my stand. He goes underneath the stand. Now I have a bar that sits in front of my stand that is a gun rest, right? Mm-hmm. So you rest your gun on there for stability. So at this point, I'm like, okay, I got to get my shotgun. I get the scope up. I get the gun on. It's kind of a steep angle because I'm pointing the gun down. He's about 20. I mean, I think he was 20 yards in front of me.
Wow. It would,
for bow hunters out there, and I don't bow hunt anymore. I just don't have the time. I wish I did. It's a perfect range for a bow kill. I mean, you couldn't. This was like set up as the easiest. People can probably see where this is going.
Yeah.
This was the easiest deer hunting kill ever, because everything happened according to plan.
Somehow you screwed it up, I'm guessing.
They didn't pick up my scent. I fired, and I looked as soon as I fired. Bang! Loud bang. He kind of jumps. I'm thinking, in my mind, I'm like, well, there's no way I could have missed, right? There's no way in hell I could have missed. It was like a 20-yard shot. Dave, the only thing I can think of is it's kind of like a layup. And you have an open court and there's no defenders and you miss the layup, because I missed. I completely missed.
And he was that close?
Yeah. I mean, I've run this through my mind about 1,000 times at this point, and there's only a couple of things that I can think of. And by the way, he let me get a second shot off, but went behind a tree, and that second one was not a good shot, and then that was it.
Is it just a weird angle that you're not used to?
Well, two things. This is what, and here's, I'm telling the story because I need someone out there to make me feel better, because I don't feel good about this right now. I'm torturing myself over
sure.
It. It's terrible, because it just runs through your mind. And as a hunter, I've had experience with these things over the years. You miss. If you hunt, that's why they're called hunting and not killing, right? I know everyone thinks it's real easy, but there are things in the woods that happen that make it very challenging. And in past years, I've missed, but never a shot like this. Look, I've shot at a range and hit a target at 300 yards before. I trained with law enforcement about 17 years ago, went to Colorado on an elk hunt, ended up shooting the bull elk that I shot at like 60 yards. So I didn't have to practice at 300, but they had me practicing at 300. I've shot deer at 175 yards before, 150 yards, no problem. Dropped them, you know, right away. And in this case, I will tell you this, I've never shot a deer this close range. So there's only a couple things that I think might have happened. I was at a bit of a steep angle, and I don't know if it was like when you hit a golf ball and your head comes up, you know, right before you make the swing.
Right.
Maybe I anticipated that it was just going to happen right in front of me, and I pulled the trigger, and maybe the gun sort of tipped up or down.
You shanked it.
But then somebody else brought this up to me, because you set the scope up based on like a 100-yard shot or a 50-yard shot or something like that. I don't know if that's a situation. I've Googled this a little bit, where it's almost too close for the scope to be on target. There's probably a gun person out there who can tell me this, but I was sick to my stomach. Now, those of you who don't like hunting and you root for the deer win every once in a while. The deer, score one for the deer.
Now, is this the first time you're telling your friends that you were with about this story, or did
no, they know about it?
Okay.
No, because
how much trouble did you get from them?
Well, they were rather kind about it, generous, but I was texting at the same time, and I think the text said something like, "I just missed about a 20." I think I said 25-yard shot. That might have been generous because I think it was more like 20-yard shot. I don't, and there was some profanity involved there, and I sat in the stand after that, thinking over and over what did I do? Now, some people would have a natural question listening right now. Are you sure? Are you sure that you didn't hit? So I went down and looked for blood because there is a possibility that you could, you know, maybe miss vital organs and then the bullet goes straight through and maybe there's a little bit of a delayed reaction. I've seen that happen too. Look, deer
but in that case, he'd still just hobble off, right?
Maybe. But yeah, usually they would run off. They can run off quite a ways without you seeing them in your vision.
Yeah.
In fact, they could get out of your sight pretty quickly and you still hit them and they might, you know, they might not be alive when you find them. I'm just baffled.
I can tell it's bothering you.
Oh, my God. You have no idea. Because it's one of those situations. The phone lines are locked up right now, but I'm going to have you go in the other room.
Yeah.
I want to get some of the Judge Roy Moore stuff. I have a bunch of audio and some other things to do. We have Josh Hawley, the attorney general. But, dear Lord, if there's anyone out there that can make me feel a little bit better, I'm sure people want to rip into me and make me feel worse, too. Believe me, you can't make me feel worse than I do right now, because it's going to linger forever. You know, you have these situations, and I think this happens in life overall, where you think to yourself, man, what if I would have done it this way, or what if I would have done it that way? And with fishing and hunting in particular, I can run through those scenarios where I missed a big fish, and I did something wrong, I made a mistake, or I missed, you know, a deer in the woods. I remember one year I had a buck that came up on me, was heading right toward me. It had rained that morning, and there was a little bit of mud that fell off my boot when I shifted in the deer stand, and that was it. Oh. And he was gone. You know, he heard that, he looked up, and he busted me, and then that was it. And that's one that always kind of sticks with me. But I don't know. It's one of those things.
I hope for your sake you don't turn into like the Chuck Knoblauch of deer hunting, the former Yankee second baseman who missed an easy throw over first base one time, and from that point on, couldn't find
well, it's
first
like
base.
Rick Ankiel, right?
Rick Ankiel, yeah.
Now,
Rick Ankiel.
I'm concerned about that.
Yeah.
Right.
You got the yips.
436-7900. I should have tackled him. I should have just tackled. If I had a handgun, it would be over. I don't know. I've shamed myself in front of the hunting community. Jump on in here. We got Roy Moore to cover this afternoon. We're back in a moment on KMOX. All right, I promise I'm going to talk about Roy Moore and some of this other stuff. I got to take a few phone calls here just to mentally get myself back into the swing of things after big defeat yesterday. Rex, you're on KMOX.
Hey, Mark. Nice to talk to you. Hey, I just wanted to say that you might have hit a twig if there's a possibility there was a twig in front of you.
Nope, no twig. Open, completely open. No, there was.
You might have pulled your head up like you described.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing for you is just stay positive and realize how special it was that you even got a chance to see it.
No, I know. Okay. And I try to do that. And look, I had deer all around me and it's just, I've shot plenty of deer and like I said, elk, and it's just frustrating because it just could not have been an easier situation. Really. It couldn't.
Yeah, I get it. I'm a hunter, but you know, just stay positive and just really appreciate the experience. And I think you'll be fine down the road.
All right, Rex. Thank you very much. Appreciate the support. Ted, you're on KMOX.
Hey, just want to tell you, I've been there, done that, and got the T-shirt.
What does the T-shirt say? I missed a buck at 20 yards?
I missed a duck buck at 20 yards, and I'll tell you, there are four issues. One, if you're first of all, you hit it already, your rifle's sighted for a longer distance,
yes.
So at that distance, your bullet is low. Two, if you lasered it and said it was 20 yards, ballistically, it's less than that even because it goes from basically like the bottom of the theoretically. Three, you've got a really short angle to see your target spot, that sweet spot that you're looking for. And if you're off just a tiny little bit, you're going to miss by a lot. And fourth is, if you just shake a little bit, now you've magnified everything.
Yeah, and you know, but the thing is that, and I think I may have shaken, but you know, if you're a hunter, you know, the adrenaline starts going and everything.
Oh, yeah.
In this particular case, I could not have been more calm. I actually had time to deliberate. I'm watching it come through. It's under my stand. I thought about making the tackle. Thought that might be painful for me. And then I get the gun up. And, you know, in all reality, and this is the type of thing that you have to teach yourself, I had plenty of time. I did not have to hurry. However, you know how these things go. Sometimes they get spooked, and then they'll just run off, and you don't want to take a shot like that, and then you're not going to hit it at all.
Well, I was fortunate enough. I had one walk underneath my stand. I did exactly what you did. He jumped across the fence over to my neighbor's property because I saw where the bullet struck underneath him. I saw it underneath in the scope.
Right.
I knew what I did. He ran down about 30 yards, jumped back over the fence into my property, and I got in the second time because I figured out what I had done.
Yeah, I wish I did. Believe me, I would have done things differently. Thanks for the call. George, you're on KMOX. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I wanted to just comment here about all of the things that were suggested by previous callers may or may not be issue, but quite frankly, the big issue that you had is you were shooting at a downhill angle, and if you shoot downhill or uphill, makes no difference, you will always shoot higher than the point of aim. That's just the way it works.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that I think it was a combination between the angle, the steep angle, and me sort of getting and anticipating the absolute hit. You know, I was convinced that there was no doubt that this deer was going to go down, and I just pulled up a little too fast with my head. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I told someone else this story. I was so convinced that I hit him that when he ran off, at first, he only went about 10 or 15 yards. I thought, oh, there's no doubt. He's just going to go down. And I took the second shot just as a precautionary shot. And, of course, I missed that one, too. I'll take one more call. Grizz, you're on KMOX. Finish up my mental torture here with some advice and your deduction here.
A little story that happened to me in California about 1975. I was hunting coastal blacktail using a .308 Winchester. Okay, the ammo for a .308 Winchester, you can also use Lake City Arsenal, like the 7.62 is interchangeable. Okay, the problem being that steel jacket, I shot a deer like at 50 yards, a beautiful blacktail, knew I hit him and everything, went down, checked, like you, I was dumbfounded how I could have missed the deer. Well, I didn't miss the deer. That ammunition did not expand. Since it was steel jacket, it went through him somewhere, I figured, below the neck, didn't hit anything vital, and that's what happened. That's why I was asking you what kind of ammo we're using. Was you using like expanding ammunition, or were you using something that had a steel jacket?
A steel jacket, but believe me, it was a miss. It wasn't a situation like that. I understand your point, but in this particular case, I'm pretty sure at this point. Look, I got out of the stand. I looked for blood, and you know, I looked around, so I just messed it up. But thanks for the call. This is one of those things. It's just one of those things. But going back to the first caller here, it's a great experience. Some people who don't hunt don't understand. It's cool just to be out there and to see the deer moving around. I got out of the woods at that point yesterday because I was seeing all these deer outside of my stand in the field. So I went out and I hid behind some brush and I had a bipod with me. And there was this little, could have been a button buck. It was a young deer. It could have been a doe or a button buck. They came up that was, and I was filming this. I videotaped this whole thing or with my camera, whatever you want to call it. This little deer was probably, I'd say, 10 yards away from me. And good thing I wasn't going to shoot it, because I would have missed.
Tonight, get ready for the Blues and Flames. Pregame 7:30. Chris Kerber and Kelly Chase have all the action starting at 8. Hear it here on your home for St. Louis Blues hockey, KMOX.
Let me see if I can pull up this tweet. I had someone on Twitter who responded to me about the Roy Moore situation, and I want to get into this just a little bit and talk about some of the things that happened over the weekend and play some audio as well. We even have audio from him. There was somebody that said, so you don't believe in our Constitution, quote, innocent until proven guilty. This is a very, very convenient time to bring up an accusation to upend an election. Now, whether or not that's what's happening, that doesn't take away from the fact that some of these things are pretty serious. And I read the Washington Post story last week. in its entirety. And I, you know, I asked a bunch of people this question, even when I was at deer camp, when it came to the Louis C.K. allegations and this. I said, did you read the New York Times piece on Louis C.K.? I said, you should do that. I was even having conversations with friends around the country when we were talking about some of this, because everyone's talking about it. And I think some of us are saying the same thing. I mean, when does this end, and how many more people are going to have serious accusations leveled against them and have their careers ended? Which, in fact, my position would be that's fine if that's what happens, if they did some of these things. There's no doubt that Louis C.K. did it, because he came out Friday. He admitted it. Roy Moore's situation is a little different. And just to kind of capsulize it here, because I still feel like a lot of people don't know the specifics here. Lee Korfman is this woman who's now 53 years old. She says she was 14 years old. She's my age. 1979, she's 14 years old. He's a DA, 32 years old, assistant DA in Alabama. And this is in Etowah County, Alabama. She's sitting on a bench with her mom, and Roy Moore comes over and introduces himself. Now, I guess back then, he was sort of a big deal. He had gone to West Point, and, you know, kind of a big fish in a small pond situation. And then in 79, he was a 32-year-old assistant DA. He strikes up a conversation with Lee Korfman and her mom and offers to watch her while mom goes inside for a child custody hearing. And Lee Korfman says, actually, this is the mom. Nancy says, well, I don't want her to go in there and hear all that. I'll stay out here with her. That's what he says to the mom. And she thinks, well, how nice it is. So they chat it up, and this is so bizarre. It's almost like I'm missing something here. He's 32 years old. He asks for her phone number. And days later, according to the story, he picks her up around the corner from her house in Gadsden, Alabama, drives her 30 minutes to his home, and tells her how pretty she is and kissed her. On the second visit, she says, he took off her shirt and pants and removed his clothes. He touched her over her bra and underpants, she says, and guided her hand to touch him over his underwear. She says, I wanted it over with. I want it out. Please get this over with. Whatever this is, just get it over. So her story in this particular account is that she had thought for years about coming forward, but was worried because she's had some issues in her past with divorce and bankruptcy, and she had gotten into some other trouble as well. And she thought, well, that's just going to expose all of that. One common denominator in a couple of these stories, now, she's not the only person that came forward. They went through and they detailed different accounts, and also they talked with some of her friends who verified that back during this time period, she said, I'm dating an older man, and they knew that this was Roy Moore. And then some of the other women, or they're now women, they were girls that were friends with Lee Korfman, admitted that they knew about this. But in a couple of these situations, here's another one. One of the other women, Wendy Miller, 14 years old. She's working at Santa's Helper at the Gadsden Mall. Moore approaches her. And at this point, she gets to know him. And then when she's 16, he starts to ask her on dates. Debbie Wesson Gibson says she was 17 when Moore spoke to her high school civics class, asked her out on the first of several dates that did not progress beyond kissing. Gloria Thacker Deason, 18 years old, as a cheerleader when Moore began taking her on dates that included bottles of wine. The legal drinking age was 19 at the time, and she was 18. I don't know how significant that is or not. But by far, Korfman's the youngest. And she says that she had contact with him that went beyond kissing, but they did not have intercourse. So the story goes on and on, and this is very detailed, and there's all kinds of questions that come up, and different women corroborate certain parts of the story, and they go into more detail about what happened in these particular instances. One thing that I'm confused about is that apparently with Debbie Wesson Gibson, her story is, I thought this was rather curious. She was 17 in the spring of 1981 when Roy Moore comes to her high school civics class, and he's talking about being an assistant DA. You know, it happens, like career day at school. She says that when he asked her out, she asked her mother what she would say if she wanted to date a 34-year-old man. Gibson says her mother asked her who the man was. And when Gibson said Roy Moore, her mom said, I'd say you were the luckiest girl in the world. Now, she's 17 years old. So there's a part of me that wonders, is this like a cultural thing that we're not familiar with? Now, I will say this, that if you go back, and I'm sure that there are some people listening that have great-grandparents or grandparents who had relationships when they were very young. Now, that's not to say that it wasn't, like maybe it was a 14-year-old and a 19-year-old or a 14 and a 20-year-old. Some of those blossomed into marriages that lasted decades in their entire lives. This was something that over the years has changed. It's a little different because the guy's 32 and the women are 15 or 16. Don't misunderstand anything I'm saying here. I'm not trying to excuse any of this behavior. I'm just pointing out some of the irregularities in the stories and how maybe some of this can be misconstrued. I don't know. I'll ask the question. So here's Roy Moore. He's sticking to his guns.
Isn't it strange that after 40 years of constant investigation, people have waited to 4 weeks prior to the general election to bring their complaints? That's not a coincidence. It's an intentional act to stop campaign.
All right, so that's what he's sticking with right now. Here's what Mitch McConnell says.
I think he should step aside.
Are you encouraging a write-in campaign with Senator Strange?
That's an option we're looking at. Whether or not there is someone who could mount a write-in campaign successfully.
So that's Luther Strange who won, or I'm sorry, lost that primary a few weeks ago.
Would it be Senator Strange, do you think?
We'll see. Yeah.
We're just about out of time.
Is the burden on Moore to prove these false versus someone to prove that these are true in this situation? Or do you believe these allegations to be true?
I believe the women, yes.
All right, so he believes the women. Here's Senator Pat Toomey.
The accusations have more credibility than the denial. I think it would be best if Roy would just step aside.
Senator Tim Scott.
I think if the allegations are true, there's no doubt that he should step aside.
All right, what about the voters? This is one voter in Alabama feels, you know what, I'm sticking with him.
Your support is not wavering at this point.
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, it's stronger than ever.
All right, stronger than ever. Others do not agree.
I'm going to vote against Roy Moore. I'm going to vote for Doug Jones. I think he's a good man. I think he's a man of integrity. And I can't say that I feel that way about Roy Moore.
You've never voted for a Democrat.
I've never voted for
a
Democrat.
All right, so she's a Republican. I'll open up the phone lines here briefly. 436-7900. Is this a witch hunt when it comes to Roy Moore? Is there enough evidence on the table right now to say he should step out of this race and move on? Now, the timing is, he's probably right, that the timing is not coincidental. What happens in these situations is there's Oppo research out there. Would it be beyond the possibility that there were people out there that knew this information that fed it to the reporters at the Washington Post? No, of course not. That probably happened. Happens all the time. That doesn't mean that the stories aren't true. I'll take a break. We have new audio from a different accuser this afternoon that has just come in. We'll get to that next on KMOX.
He's on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX. He's on your radio now. Mark Reardon on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
All right, I want to try to squeeze a couple of phone calls in here on the Roy Moore situation, but let me update you on the very latest. Now you have a woman who's come forward today, and her name is Beverly Young Nelson, and she has rather made the most serious accusation yet. She says in 1977, Roy Moore approached her in Gadsden, Alabama, at a restaurant. She was working there and signed the yearbook of hers. She's 16 years old at the time. That night, Nelson said that Moore offered her a ride home in his car. He did not get on the highway, but parked instead in the back of the restaurant. And here's her description.
Instead of driving to the street, he stopped the car. He stopped the car and he parked his car in between the dumpster and the back of the restaurant where there were no lights. The area was dark and it was deserted.
She goes further here. She says at one point he grabs her by the throat. She's saying, "Stop. I was terrified. He tried to pull my shirt off. I thought he was going to rape me." And at one point, he looks up, she says that he gave up and said, "You're a child. I am the district attorney of Etowah County." Might be mispronouncing that. "If you tell anyone about this, no one will believe you." He finally allowed me to open the car door, and I either fell out or he pushed me out. I was on the ground as he pulled out of the parking area behind the restaurant. The passenger door was open as he burned rubber pulling away. Now, why are some of these things? There's a lot of stories that are starting to build up. And I kind of understand in the situation of the Hollywood types why people don't want to come forward, because they think that they're not going to be believed and there's a lot of livelihoods on the line. You accuse someone and they have more power over you and they can destroy you and you may lose your career. In this situation, I think it's a little different. Not to offer any excuses. I happen to think that he should pull out of the race. I really do. But the circumstances are very different and we're finding out even more. Jay, you're on KMOX. Let me see if I can squeeze a couple calls in here.
Well, of course, Moore should be off the ballot. There's no excuse.
And I think the floodgates have been opened, and that's why maybe some of these gals haven't reported it over the years. But knowing Alabama a little bit, the dumb clucks down there, they might still support the guy. But he ought to be off. Luther Strange is the obvious choice as a right end. And I frankly actually hope the Dems win. But Luther Strange would be a much superior candidate.
All right. Well, just to clarify, Jay did say clucks. My producer looked up like I should hit the dump button. I heard clucks. Betty, you're on KMOX.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I adopted a child from Alabama, and that's been almost 12 years ago. And at the time, the birth mother was turning 15, at the latest turning 16. I can't remember which way. The birth father was 26. I did ask if that was considered rape when I spoke to my attorney and making all these decisions, and it was not. They were, I think the age of consent was 14.
Yeah, I think that's changed now. I think it's 16. I'd have to look at the story.
Okay. But what was it? My question is, and I'm not in any way condoning what this man did. I'm just saying, what was it 30 years ago?
Yeah, the legal age of consent, norm? Yeah, it was, in fact, in Alabama, it is 16. And in Alabama, a person who's at least 19 who had sexual contact with someone older than 12 and younger than 15 had committed sexual abuse in the second degree. So the 14-year-old would qualify. That's both now and then. Yes, both now and then, according to the Washington Post story. I'm out of time. Thanks for the call, Betty. Sorry to cut you short here, but we're coming up on the top of the hour. We're back after the news.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.